build campers and trailers, companies that build boats right now. The son who sells boats, and he's told me that the bottom's fallen out of the market for a while. They find out where they can get some gas for them. But those are dislocations that I think will ease as we begin to economize and get down in the fuel and suddenly find out. In the East, they have revived the ski train idea for some of the ski resorts where they run special trains for people just to get up to where the skiing is. But there will be, there's no question, we're going to have to tighten our belts in some things. And the first priority must be providing fuel for people who want to go to work and providing the fuel to keep plants open so that they can have jobs.
Can I see you? Well, I just want to mention, but do you think that the unemployment would go up by this?
Unemployment's going to go up some, yes. It already has. We have an increase in unemployment here due to the layoffs in the automobile plants where they're retooling now to make smaller cars instead of the bigger cars that aren't selling. But again, I don't think it's going to reach a depression stage or even a recession stage. There's been some increase in it. I think this, too, is going to ease off as we get more supplies in the summer. And we'll be definitely helped, of course, if the Arabs lift the oil embargo. Well, if they're talking about item vetoes, they must be talking about the budget. In the budget, the governor is responsible under our Constitution for submitting the budget to the legislature. The governor makes out the budget for all the departments of the state, and it must be a balanced budget. And if it isn't a balanced budget, the governor must ask for taxes to make it a balanced budget. Now, the legislature, they take the budget up there, and they change it around some, and then they send it back down. The governor cannot put anything back that the legislature has taken out, but the governor can veto out anything they put in. And virtually every year, I have to do that, because without sending any tax bill down to pay for it, the legislature adds spending measures that would put us in debt, that are more than the revenues we have coming in. If I didn't know that such a bill was being talked, but what it would mean, I suppose, would be to take away this ability to item veto these things out. Now, the legislature can then override my veto if they don't like what I've taken out. They can override it with a two-thirds vote. But I think that it's made for great stability in California. Every governor's had this power. The legislature feels strongly enough that they can get a two-thirds majority. They can override that line item. But when they do, then they're going to have to pass a tax bill to pay for it. And they would much rather pass spending bills than tax bills.
Plan programs that will open
open jobs during the summer.
Well, every year we've had a summer employment program, two phases. We've had a state employment program where we take on the summer jobs as many young people as we can. But we have also then cooperated with local governments in trying to stimulate employment at private level for young people. The highest rate of unemployment is to be found among teenagers, particularly those looking for summer jobs. And I have a theory about that. I take a second and give it to you. I had to work. In fact, my first job when I was 14 years old, my first summer job was with a construction gang. And then I got smart and became a lifeguard for the next seven summers, all the way through school. But in those days, the boss could literally pay you by reaching his pocket and pulling the money out. And today, with all our social reforms that may be and are proper for full-time employment, such things as Social Security and industrial accident insurance and everything else, today a great many of the jobs that you used to get have just simply been eliminated. Because those things, plus the minimum wage, have made the employer feel he can get along without the job rather than going to all that trouble. And I have long thought that if we could sit down in government with business and particularly with labor, organized labor, and say, wait a minute, why should some young person who's going to school, why should they have to be subject to all of these things and have Social Security and everything deducted until they get out of school and
their permanent job and start working. My daughter, when she was 3 years old, one day I was doing a General Electric Theater and television. I wanted to be in the show with me. 3 years old, I had to take her downtown and get a social security number for her. You know. And I think this has hurt employment for young people. If you could say to the employer today, look, all of those things and all of that bookkeeping and all those deductions from the paycheck do not have to be taken for part-time work or summer jobs for students, for young people who are still going to school, I think it'd open up an awful lot of jobs for young people. And I, someday, by golly, I'm going to start beating the drums for that.
How do you feel about the situation of Patricia Hurst?
Well, I think it's tragic, and I pray that she'll be returned safely to the family. And I have no criticism of what the family has done in trying to bring that about. But I just said this morning, and I'll say again, I don't think that any of the people should take that food. I think for these criminals who performed this kidnapping, committed this crime, to try to enlist honest people into sharing in the so-called ransom by saying we're doing it for them, I think the honest people ought to say to them, we don't want food that way. We don't want to be at the price of a kidnapping or harm to some young girl. And maybe if they did, maybe these hypocrites that have done the kidnapping would be exposed in their true light.
Do you think because of Patricia Hurst's kidnapping that the attitude toward poor people will change?
Well, I don't know. How do you mean change?
Will they have more benefits for poor people? So they won't have to be poor, because this United States is a tough, and you know, they're kind of a rich country, and they shouldn't be, I don't think they should be poor people in the United States.
Well, I know, but not here again, now this gets into that area of what I call political and economic fairy tales. Poverty is a comparative thing in our country. And I'm not going to say there aren't poor people. And there are people that there are, and there are people that don't have some of the things and the advantages that other people have. And yet, in other countries, poverty is based on whether you have enough to eat and a roof over your head and something to wear, shoes on your feet. And in our country, I would say that our poor live at a higher level than any other country in the world. Now, this doesn't mean we don't have a ways to go, but we do more in our society for those who need help than any other country or any other society you can name. The not only in our government programs, for example, here in California, we have raised the welfare grant 30% for those on welfare. We've raised them to the blind, the aged, and the disabled, more than that. In addition to that, every year, voluntarily, the people in this country contribute about $20 billion to good causes of various kinds, programs of this kind. Now, if this serves to focus more people's attention on how much more there still is to be done, fine. But it's an awful price to pay. We ought to be able to focus that attention without making an innocent young girl go through what's been now 3 weeks of terror, to say nothing of the agony of her parents and family for this. This isn't the way to go about it.
You think a Republican has a good chance of becoming the president of the United States because of Watergate?
Well, we won't know that until 1976. And I hope by that time Watergate is long gone. It's before the courts, and the courts will make a decision on it, and they'll find the guilty guilty and convict them, and they'll find the innocent innocent. I think one of the most regrettable things in Watergate so far has been that the flood of talk and accusation and charge has made a great many of us forget that you're innocent until you're proven guilty in a court of law. And we have just sort of accepted, pointing fingers and saying these people are guilty, and we don't know that they're guilty yet. And we ought to pull ourselves up short and remember that. Then those that are guilty should be punished. No question about it. It was illegal, it was immoral. Shouldn't have been done. But I don't really think that it should reflect on anyone other than the people actually involved. Certainly no party had anything to do with it. I don't think it should be any more than that we should have turned against the Democrats when we had the Bobby Baker case, you know, Billy Saul Estes affair. Now, those are a little before your time, a few years back. Or at least not before your time, before you were interested in public affairs. But they were graft in government. They were corruption involving some people in government. And you don't blame millions of people in a political party for what a few people do. Well, we've just passed some legislation. The bill signed, authored by Senator Moscone, and I signed it into law on this conflict of interest and statement of whether you have such a conflict and so forth. And right now, he's working on another bill to clarify some of the things that were misunderstood in the first one that caused some local government officials to resign and so forth. And we've been working with him on that. No, I think it's fair. I don't think that a public official should totally lose his right to privacy. I don't think that any more than the publisher of the newspaper or any other citizen. And we fought a revolution that said a man should be safe in his books and papers. But I think there's a way to do it, and this is what the Moscone Bill does. The Moscone Bill says if you own stock in a certain company that may sometime have dealings with the government, you don't have to tell how much stock you have. But you set a figure and you say you have to say, I own more than this amount. And then you can, on that basis, disqualify yourself as a government official from participating in anything to do with that particular business. And I believe very much in that kind of accountability. Now, well, the hospitals aren't closing. They really aren't. We closed a few because a new system that we have here in California, and one that has made us the number one in the nation, if not the world, in the care of the mentally ill, is working so successfully. Some years before I became governor, they passed a bill here, signed into law, and this bill said that with the new tranquilizer drugs, the new methods of treatment that we have, we can treat patients better at local health care clinics in their own communities. Some of them be able to live at home and even hold a job and simply go into the clinic on a regular basis as an outpatient. Others hospitalized there in their home community where their family can visit them and so forth more frequently. Then in these great state hospitals that are so big with thousands of patients that what you really did was put the people in there and store them away like in a warehouse. They never did come out. We're able to cure some of the mentally ill now. We're able to, if not cure them, at least make them able to live a fairly normal life. Now, the idea was that the state subsidizes those county health care clinics so that gives them enough money so that they can take over. And as they began doing this, when they started the bill, there were 37,000 people in the state hospital. By the time I became governor, there were 26,500. We're down now to 7,000. And the rest are 7,000 mentally ill. There are about 13,000 mentally retarded. And this is done due to the stimulant of these counties. In Los Angeles County, we have 1,400 of those local institutions alone and doing a remarkable job. Now, when you shrank the population down, yes, there were some hospitals, but it was just uneconomic to ask the taxpayers to continue to support them when you could take the few patients left and put them in another hospital. But there are no plans now for closing the remainder of the hospital. There will always have to be some state hospitals for the criminally insane and for those who do permanently require custodial care, who will never be able to take care of them themselves. Now, it may be in the future that as these county clinics get better, but maybe there will come a time when a government, I won't be here then, but a government will look and say, well, we can continue. states I know have it. In no state has it brought in the revenue off the sales tax, for example. And it has a great overhead in cost. You have to keep promoting them. And I've had letters from legislators in other states where they have it, New York, for example. And they have told me if they had it do over again, they'd vote no. They wouldn't vote for it.
Don't you think that it would be in the best interest of the people of California to treat the peripheral canal issue and the completion of I-5 as separate issues and for you to authorize the swift completion of I-5?
Well, I want the peripheral canal built, but you can't.
I'm not interested in the peripheral canal. I'm basically interested in I-5, and I was just wondering if
they
seem to be in completion of I-5, or State 5, and I was just thinking that I think that they should be treated as separate issues. I don't want to debate peripheral canal. I was just
No. They are separate issues. Where they got tangled up was in trying to save the taxpayers some money. We found that here's a proposed route for a canal. Here's a proposed route for a freeway. Now you have to have, you're building the freeway and you got to have fill for it, dirt. So before this, they go out and find some land they can buy, at least, and they take the dirt out and haul it over. Well, we said, what's wrong with taking the dirt from where we think there maybe someday is going to be a canal and using it for the highway? Because if you don't, when it comes time to dig the canal, then you got to buy some land someplace to dump the dirt that you take out of the canal. Now, somebody has tried to make a controversy out of this, opponents mainly of the peripheral canal.
I'm not really concerned with the peripheral canal. I was just saying that, don't you think that now it's been delayed for a couple of years with inflation and all that, in reality, it's probably costing us more money than whatever if we had completed it swiftly.
Well, I don't think this has held up Interstate 5 in any way. What's held Interstate 5 up mainly is the fact that, in contrast to what some people think about the gasoline tax fund, our whole highway building program has slowed down because it costs so much more to build highways now. And each mile that you build, then that same gas tax fund has to pay for the maintenance of that highway. So the amount that you have for building highways keeps getting less and less, unless you want to raise the tax. And I don't think anyone wants to raise the tax. And I think that Interstate 5 also ties in with the federal funds that are frozen at the moment and that we're not getting. And we have been pressuring the federal government to unfreeze those funds and let us go ahead with this construction. We think also in answer to that other question that was asked earlier, it would help in the unemployment thing too if we could open up more construction. Now, who else you haven't asked? The state tuition actually didn't double. There's two sets of figures. There's a set of fees. And up until a few years ago, there was no tuition. There were those fees, various student fees that were paid into the Associated Student Fund and so forth. And a few years ago, the university adopted $100 a quarter, which for the three periods of going nine months to school would be $300 tuition. And this was the first time they'd had tuition at the state university. We had it. We think that an education that is prorating out at cost of about $3,500 per student, to ask the student to pay $300 of it, particularly since we put in a provision that if that's a hardship that would keep him from going to the university, he can defer the tuition until he gets out of school. But this is more fair. You see, the university is in competition with schools like Stanford and Southern Cal, College, University of the Pacific, and all these other schools that have tuition. And sometimes students that are willing to pay tuition and aren't admitted, for example, to Stanford, and their second choice is Berkeley. And you say, well, here's a fellow that was willing to pay $2,000 a year tuition at Stanford, and now because he couldn't get in there, he's going to school at the taxpayer's expense. Shouldn't he have to pay something for it? Going to school. Now let me wait till I see it. Who still hasn't asked one? Well, we take those two and then we'll start over again. You and then you.
What was the reason behind vetoing a bill that would set up the state rent subsidy program for the poor?
The bill of the state rent subsidy for the poor. Well, because, first of all, this is in the hands of the federal government as programs of this kind. And we would have been duplicating something else the federal government's doing. We think that they've preempted the field, and we'd be just as happy to do it if the federal government would turn these things over to the state and turn back to us the money they take from us to do that. But we didn't see the point in us getting into that field and duplicating something that's all program that's already going on.
Yes, I was wondering if you have personally reviewed any of the recently developed educational programs, and if so, do you agree with them?
Well, now, what programs are we talking about?
Well, like the general, just the general trend that education is taking.
Well, no, I don't have too much of an opportunity unless it comes to me in the form of something requiring legislation. You see, we have an elected constitutional officer, the superintendent of education, and we have a state school board, which the governor appoints. They work together, but they work to maintain actual control of the schools in the local school districts. In our country, we believe in, and always have believed in, a school system where the local school boards run the schools. I can't recall. I try to keep aware of some of the things that are going on being proposed. We've taken a position, for example, with legislation ourselves in favor of a dual language instruction to remove the language barrier in schools that's kept so many, particularly of our Spanish-speaking community, from keeping up with education. Things of this kind, but unless it comes to something requiring legislation, why, I don't have more than just a passing knowledge of it. Now we'll start with the beginner over there.
Governor Ray, presently our school district is under a lawsuit for not being integrated. And I'd like to know, how do you feel about integrated education? If you are for it, how do you think it should be instituted?
Well, of course, we've made great progress in that field. We haven't completed the job as well. Integrated education, everybody believes in it. I believe in it, certainly. I think that sometimes, in an effort to speed it, we've done unwise things. I've always believed two things, two approaches. They're slower than some people would like them to have. One of them is to see where we have communities that have divided into ethnic groups, neighborhoods, if we can't change district lines for a school, to do the integration by simply incorporating parts of these ethnic communities into one district. The second one, I happen to believe, is economic. There is no question that for many years the minority communities was not coming up and were slow in reaching the economic level of the whole society. We found out with some of our job programs, getting jobs for people, that some of these lines broke down in these ethnic communities when you broke the economic barriers. That it's all well and good to pass a law and say anyone can live any place they want to live. But if you haven't got the money to buy the ticket, then that law doesn't do you much good. And we found out that when we could give people the jobs and the economic opportunities to where they could have the money to choose where they wanted to live, some of those lines between those ethnic communities began to emerge. Now, this is a long-range solution, but I think it's the most practical solution. I think that one of these days, when there are no pockets of poverty, I don't say that everybody is going to be at the same level. We don't have that kind of a society. But everybody is going to be able to maintain a certain level of living. I think you'll find that a lot of the problems that have caused segregation will disappear. Segregation is as much the result of geography now as it is of any attempt to keep people apart.
Smoking bill, you were talking about. You said you were against the smoking designated area in schools because, in the first place, smoking under the age of 18 is against the law. How valid do you think a law is that's not even being enforced? Because it's obvious that law isn't very well enforced at all.
I know, but I suppose maybe I feel not enough people are paying attention to some of the things we've learned about things like that, what they should do. I guess you, the law, if I understand, I'm not a lawyer, but if I understand the law, it isn't so much that the law is against smoking, so much as it's against buying cigarettes. And so you have to deal with them where they buy them. So tell me, we've only got 1 minute. I take your question.
If by chance you were and decided to run for president and made it, would there be any guarantee that you could give the American people that there would be no scandal, like within your cabinet or?
No one in government can make that guarantee, I'm sorry to say. It's something that you live with. You do your utmost to check out the people you're going to appoint to various positions. And you finally do it trusting and believing in them. But no, you go to bed every night with the knowledge that someone out here can stray from the path, just as they do in every other line of activity in life. And you just have to live with it. But so you can't make that guarantee. You do your best. Well, they tell me the time's up. Well, we're off the air. You know, that, I know this question comes a lot. Could I say something to you? Maybe you're going to be inclined not to believe it. But take it my word for it, because I still don't think of myself as a politician.
Matter of fact, we have a quote here in our administration. We say, when we start talking about government as we instead of they, we've been here too long. Believe me, government is far more honest than every citizen can claim to be. We go all through our lives saying, oh, those politicians. And when you can point the case here and point the case there, it isn't true. There are a great many people who are totally sincere. I may disagree with what they think, and they disagree with what I think and what we're trying to do. But they're sincere, they're dedicated, they really want to accomplish something and want to serve their people. And don't get cynical out of a thing that right now, as I told a group of college students just a little while ago today, this isn't new or it isn't worse. As a matter of fact, we're getting better. When you stop to think, really, that you ought to take some pride that this case that now is on everybody's lips is before the courts. In most countries in the world, it never gets to the courts. They sweep it under the rug. But here in America, we've got the guts to stand up and say, here.
You're going to just like all the others that have?
Well, I don't think he's guilty.
Is that
a
Republican?
No. No, I don't. Not for that reason. First of all, I don't think he would have been that stupid. This thing was a very stupid act. Why it was killed, no one would ever know. I don't think he was. But first of all, he's an atheist. There's only one individual who has testified that he thinks that he knew something about it. And all the other, see, this is it. We've lost track of what he's being accused of. He's being accused of, did he know something about it? Well, one fellow said that he did, but a half a dozen fellows before the Senate committee said he didn't. Now, there's only one way to decide this, in a courtroom. That court's going to be decided. But in the meantime, again, doesn't he, even though he's president, doesn't he have the same right that you and I have to be considered innocent until somebody serves him guilty?
What? I said, yes, he has the same right as innocent until proven guilty, but he also should have to pay the same consequences if he is found guilty as any other.
No one in this country should be above the law.
That's what they're doing. They're letting for every bit of information that they get about someone, somebody says, well, I'll tell you this about so-and-so who did this, then they let him off the hook little by little. They go, well, we'll drop this charge against you if you tell us this about that person.
Oh, well, now, wait a minute. Now, this is one of the things that right here in Sacramento we're trying to do something about with regard to law enforcement. It's called plea bargaining. Now, plea bargaining isn't because you want to do someone a favor. Plea bargaining is the trial. And in a matter of another few weeks, if he's guilty, he's in jail. Today, you stop to think of years. You suddenly see a man come to trial and you say, good Lord, he committed this crime 3 years ago. Now, the Harry district attorney, this is why they plea bargain. They got a case, and they got 40 cases lined up. And the DA says to the defense attorney, look, if your guy will